The Yeshiva Sha'arei Torah is proud to present a lecture series on Jewish history by Rabbi Beryl Wine. This is his 13th in the series, entitled Yavne and the Early Tanoim, delivered February 27, 1985.
Yochanan Ben Zakkai, who is the architect of the Jewish future, the man who single-handedly saved the Jewish people during the time of the destruction of the Second Temple. I want to continue that discussion tonight and also to point out to you how the Jewish world was saved at such an awful moment in its history. I think the first point that we have to deal with is the fact that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was committed to the fact that the Jewish people should live. A great many Jews were committed to the fact that the Jewish people should die gloriously. The story of Matsada that I have discussed with you, that 1,000 Jews committed suicide rather than be slaves and live under Rome, has a glorious ring to it. It sounds very heroic. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was more heroic because he chose to live. Always more difficult to live than to die, because to live requires a constant daily effort, a struggle with life and with the circumstances that never countenances, never allows the Jewish people a moment's respite. Now, that's an important point to remember, because that is really the hallmark of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was committed to the life of the Jewish people. Everything that he did was for that purpose. And therefore, all of his political decisions, all of the takonos that he decreed, all of his educational prowess with his students, all was to create an atmosphere where the Jewish people would be able to live, to continue, to survive, and as we know, to out-survive the Roman Empire. Titus built an arch in Rome, and he minted coins. The arch depicted the Jewish people going into captivity, the holy vessels of the temple being borne away to the treasure houses of Rome. The coins depicted on them the words Judea Capta, Judea captured, Judea conquered. Today, the arch stands as a monument to the destruction of the Roman Empire. It's one of the few things that we have left from the time of Titus. And the coins also stand as a monument to the Roman Empire. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's school at Yavne, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's determination to see to it that the Jewish people should live, has allowed the Jewish people to survive till today. And to that extent, we are within the realm of truth when we say that we are all the heirs, we are all the descendants of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The Talmud phrases it that way. The Talmud, when it lists the lineup, so to speak, of the great men of Israel who brought us till today, so in the earliest generations, it's Moshe and Yoshua and David. And in the later generations, the Gemara says that's Hillel and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Because Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is that guarantor of Jewish life. The man who refused to give up, who did not commit suicide, who did not withdraw into piety, who did not say platitudes, who went out and did something. And he built the yeshiva at Yavne. Now, lest you think that for some reason everybody agreed with him, that wouldn't be the Jewish way of doing things. It never has been the Jewish way of doing things. And God never gives us clear-cut decisions. So that, as I mentioned to you, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Talmud tells us on his own deathbed, he wept and he said, I don't know on which road I am going. I don't know whether I did the right thing or the wrong thing. Because there were many choices. I'm not sure. But even though all of his life he was beset by inner doubts and by outer criticism, he pursued his course like a lion. He never wavered. The Gemara tells us that originally to Yavne, only one of his Talmidim went with him, the great Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, about whom we're going to speak. Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya was a Levi. He served in the Beis HaMikdash yet. He was from the choir of the Levim in the Beis HaMikdash. He was a student of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and he lived a very long time. He lived to the time of Rabbi Akiva, which is the next generation, and he, according to many, he saw the fall of Beitar, the end of the rebellion of Bar Kokhba, the final disaster of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. He lived, according, if we add all of that up, he lived about 100 years. But Reb Shua ben Chananya was the only one that accompanied him. The other great rabbis of the time did not accompany him. And if I may, just for a moment or two, I don't like to confuse us all with names, but these names are important to know. In the generation of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Nossi was to have been Rabban Gamliel, the second Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel's father, Rabban Shimon, who was the first Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, died during the Churban. We don't know if he died in the siege, we don't know how he died, but he disappears during the war in Yerushalayim. And therefore, the mantle of leadership passed to his son, Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, in his interview with the Emperor Vespasian, was able to guarantee free passage, safe conduct for Rabban Gamliel. But Rabban Gamliel didn't believe the Romans. And therefore, he did not come out of hiding for almost 7 or 8 years, till after the Churban. During that period of time, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai served as the Nossi, as the head of the Sanhedrin, as the prince, as the leader of Israel, even though he was not from the house of Hillel, and he was not from the house of David. Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai was a Kohen. Rabban Gamliel, however, when he will become the Nossi, the great Rabban Gamliel, the Yavne, he's called, Rabban Gamliel of Yavne, the second Rabban Gamliel. He is one of the strongest people that we meet in Jewish history. And he devoted, just as Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai devoted his life to building the Jewish people, he built the institution of the Nossi and the institution of the Sanhedrin. And he built it at great cost. We'll see that he was a controversial person who had many disputes with great people during his lifetime. But he was out to establish the supremacy of the office of the Nossi in order to guarantee that the Jewish people would survive. Because if the Jewish people did not have strong leadership, if they did not have some sort of unity, even if the unity was imposed, he felt that they would not survive this blow, this destruction of the temple and the loss of their political status and the effect that it could have. And therefore, they needed a strong central authority, and he was going to be it. He will say, Lo lichvodi asisi, velo lichvod beis abo asisi. I did not do it for my honor, nor for the honor of my father's house. But I did it so that the Jewish people would survive. I did it so that somehow we would have a flag to rally round. And that was the greatness of Ram Gamliel. But Ram Gamliel did not go to Yavne in its first years. Ram Gamliel was not there. The great Rabbi Tzodok, who was a colleague and compatriot of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you'll remember, asked the emperor for medical treatment for Rabbi Tzodok because he had fasted for the 40 years preceding the destruction of the temple. And he was a person that was ill, frail, and he was old. He was the tzaddik of the generation. He was the great pious Jew of the generation. He also did not go to Yavne. Now, there was another man. These are all students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai who disagreed with their Rebbe. Because what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in effect said, we are going to forget about Yerushalayim. But not forget about it in terms of forgetting about it in Jewish life or Jewish thought, but it makes no difference that we have no central authority anymore in Yerushalayim. We will make the central authority in Yavne. And when we can't have it in Yavne anymore, we'll move it. The central authority is not bound to any place, no matter how holy the place is. Many of the people of his generation were unable and unwilling to accept that idea. Their attachment to Yerushalayim, their attachment to what had been the place of the Beis Hamikdash, etc., was of such a nature that they were not willing to acquiesce to make it somewhere else. So to speak, they felt that if they were stubborn enough, then God would have to change his mind, Gaviyohu. They were not going to move it. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made the central authority in Yavne, thereby coming to terms with the Churban, coming to terms with the destruction of the temple, and with the fact that there would no longer be any central authority in Yerushalayim, many of the rabbis dissented. And among them were his own Talmidim, who only after a number of years began to drift to Yavne because that was the only place that it could be. Now the Gemara tells us the story. But the Gemara always dresses stories in an allegorical, mystical dress. Anybody who studies the Talmud has to realize that what you see is not what you get. Anyone who thinks that that's what learning is, that that's what, you know, I did Baba Kama, right? I know all about it, misses the whole point. That the Churchill said about Russia, that it's a riddle wrapped in a mystery, wrapped in an enigma. Well, Lahavdil Elef Havdolos, the Talmud is more than that. The Talmud, you can't unwrap it. You're never finished unwrapping. And so they chose how to tell a story, that the story should remain alive throughout all the generations. In it should be the kernel of history of what happened, but there should be a moral lesson that can be applied, because otherwise we'll say, you know, it's a history. I tell you the story how George Washington kept the American army alive at Valley Forge in the winter of 1777. That's a story, but it really has nothing to do with me, except that Valley Forge and I was going to have glatt kosher for Pesach, which I'm sure Washington had in mind when he founded the country. But it's a historic event. More than that, I mean, I can't darshan Torah into it. I cannot blow a soul into it, right? He crossed the Delaware, he defeated the Hessians, right? So, but what is the moral of that? Chazal, when they tell a story, are not telling the story. They're using the story to convey to you a moral idea. a description of every man, not just a description of that man. They are analyzing the human condition, the human psyche, and they always tell stories about great people, because in a great person, you always find the small person. In the small person, you could say, well, it happened to him. It's not going to happen to me, which is what we always say, right? I don't have to wear a seatbelt because I'm a good driver. I don't have to worry about anything. I'm protected. But when you hear stories about great people who are admittedly greater than you are, so then perhaps you may think that they're talking about you as well. That is the purpose of the stories that Chazal tell us. So the Chazal tell us that we have in Pirkei Avos that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five famous Talmidim, five of the great men of the Mishnah were the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And the Mishnah says, in the Mishnah it says, Hu oyamone shvochom. He counted their assets, how great they were. One of his students, and one of the students that Chamisha, it's in the second parak in Ovis in the 10th Mishnah. Chamisha Talmidim Oyel Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai had five students, and they were Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus, Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya, Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, Rabbi Shimon ben Nasanel, Rabbi Elozer ben Aroch. But the Gemara says that the Mishnah brings two opinions as to who was the greatest of the Talmidim. One opinion is that it was Rabbi Lezer ben Hurkanus was the greatest. The other opinion was that it was Rabbi Elozer ben Aroch. But Rabbi Elozer ben Aroch was certainly a great Talmid of his. He's either number one or number two. And the Gemara tells us a story about Rabbi Elozer ben Aroch. That Rabbi Elozer ben Aroch was a very wealthy man. All the years that he learned Torah in the yeshiva with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, so in the yeshiva, wealth played no role. They didn't know what anybody was. We're going to see later that Rabbi Gamliel didn't know that Rabbi Yeshua was a blacksmith. It was a very egalitarian society, the Jewish society, which it has remained. And a man won his way on merit. No one cared very much in the yeshiva, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, what anybody had or didn't have. But Rabbi Elozer ben Aroch had money. And when the Churban came and Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai went to Yavne, Rabbi Elozer ben Aroch did not go to Yavne. And we have two or three different versions of the same story. One is in the Yerushalmi, one is in the Bavli, and one is in the Medrash. They're almost the same story. There are nuances between them. But the story basically is that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wanted this great student, this great disciple of his, to come to Yavne with him, to help him build the Jewish people. And Rabbi Elozer ben Aroch said he's going on vacation. And he went either to Emmaus, which is the Girsa in the Yerushalmi. Emmaus is a famous, it was the Miami Beach of its day. Miami Beach is passe. It was the Aruba of its day. Curacao. Where it was a very famous watering hole on the Syrian coast of the Mediterranean. Others say he went to a place called Diamessus, which also was some say that that's the same as Emmaus. It's like the second Emmaus, Diamessus. It's Emmaus 2. And he went there. It says in the Gemara, "Lamokam mayim hayofim." It had beautiful waters, and it had a nice beach, and it had good wine. The Gemara describes it. Right, it had a boardwalk. And he went there. So here we have the different nuances in the story. So I'm going to mix up the story a little for you, but it just illustrates the point. Rav Lozer ben Aruch was the great Talmud Chacham. So he went. So his Rebbe went to Yavne. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says about him that the great mile of Rav Lozer ben Aruch was Lev Tov. He had a good heart. That's why Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai said, Roe ani es divrei Elozer ben Aruch. I see that Rav Lozer ben Aruch is correct, because if a person has a good heart, then he can have a good eye and everything else. If he doesn't have a good heart, then it all comes out perverted. It all comes out crooked. He had such a good heart, he couldn't leave. He couldn't see that another center should be built outside Yerushalayim. Couldn't bring himself to that. So even though his Rebbe went to Yavne, and even though his Rebbe asked him to go with him to Yavne, he went to Emmaus. He went on vacation. But he figured, you know, he'll open up a yeshiva in Emmaus, right? Nothing wrong with... Doesn't have to be cold where you have a yeshiva. You can open up a yeshiva in a warm climate. And Adarabe, he figured that the students will come there. They'll flock to him. So the Talmud tells us they waited. He waited a period of time. Nobody came. When nobody came, so in his honesty, he said to himself, maybe I made a mistake. Which is itself greatness personified. Any person who can say, maybe I made a mistake, especially when he achieves greatness, most great people not only never make mistakes, they never think that they make mistakes. There's no one that stops to think, you know, maybe I'm wrong, right? We're certain my policy is correct. This is good. It's 100%. No doubt. If you have somebody that says maybe, you know, so in our definition, he's indecisive. He's not worthy of being a leader, because a leader cannot afford doubts. And that's why most leaders put the countries that they lead into the messes that are the story of history. But he said, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I should have gone with the Rebbe. So he came home one day and he started to pack his bags. He's going to go to Yavne. Right? There at least they're learning. Can't get a suntan, but they're learning there at least. Not bad. But he had a wife. He had a Rebbetzin. And she said to him, where are you going? A famous mushel, she said, says, who comes to whom? Does the barrel of wine come to the mice, or do the mice come to the barrel of wine? That was the mushel that she used, that the Yerushalmi tells us. What do you mean? You're going to go by those, you know, who, by the 16, 17-year-old Kratzers to be by them? What do they know? You wait here till they come. So one lushen of the story, one version of the story is that he listened to her naturally, and he forgot everything. He not only forgot everything, he forgot how to read Hebrew. The Medrash brings that they gave him an aliyah on the Parsha that we're going to have, Parshas HaChodesh, Parshas Bo. So it begins in the Torah, HaChodesh Hazeh Lochem. This month is on to you, the first of all months of the year. So he couldn't read it anymore. So he read HaCheresh Hoyo Libom. The Dalet he mistook for a Resh, and the Chof he mistook for a Beis. Naturally, the rabbis put the needle in there also, because HaCheresh Hoyo Libom means that their heart, this great man that he said Lev Tov, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said about him, he's the original good heart. Now his heart is deaf. Can't hear anymore. Can't even read Hebrew anymore. The beach did it. The good wine. His wife's COVID. All combined to destroy him. The second version of the story is not quite as tragic, though it is tragic, and that is that he was discounted in halacha already. The man who started out to be the greatest of the Talmidim is almost never quoted in the Talmud. Not reckoned with. And because he didn't follow up. He didn't do what he was supposed to do. But in that story is mirrored the struggle of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that he couldn't even get his own students to go with him. None of them went. Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, none of them went with him. Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, the only one that went with him was Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya. But they single-handedly built Yavne. And once Yavne started to be built, and all the other Talmidei Chachomim, who were men of great intellectual honesty, enormous intellectual honesty, the hallmark of a Talmud Chochem is that he's intellectually honest. Moda Aloemis, we say every morning, that a Jew should be able to be Moda Aloemis, to admit that he's wrong. V'dover Emes Bilvovo, and to say in his heart what is true. Even if it may be painful, even if it may require reassessment. So they built Yavne. When they built Yavne, the other Talmidei Chachomim came. After they came, then Ram Gamliel came. And when Ram Gamliel came, so the great Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai abdicated. Because he was not from the house of the Nossi, he was not the heir. He said he was old and tired. Ram Gamliel was young and new blood. Let Ram Gamliel run it. Let Ram Gamliel become the Nossi. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, so to speak, folds his garments and disappears from the scene. In the deathbed scene in the Gemara Brochus, which describes Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you see the titles that the Jewish people gave him. Amud HaYamini, the right-hand pillar that supported the house of Israel. Patish HaChozok, the strong hammer. Ner Yisrael, the light of Israel. He was the father and the mother. He was the man that brought greatness. But we see it in the hindsight of generations. We see now how right the decision was. We see now how it guaranteed Jewish survival. But he who was in it, in the midst, and he had to make the decision himself, did not make it without doubt. And he did not make it without criticism, and he did not make it without dissent. But once having made it, he forced it through. He built it. And with the building of Yavne is the building of the Jewish people. Now, let's speak about his Talmidim. Because this is the next generation. And this generation are the people who established the framework of the relationship of the Jewish people to learning and to their society and to Rome, etc. First of all, the people of Yavne struck up a dialogue immediately with the Roman emperors and with the leaders of Rome. It's not that they forgave them for what happened. But again, in the practicality and pragmatic attitude, so they wanted to do what they could for the Jewish people. we will see that they were so successful that at the within 50 years after the destruction of the temple, in the year 120, the Jews will petition Rome to rebuild the temple. And the Jews felt that they had sufficient votes in the Senate, so to speak, to be able to get it through, and that the Romans would not oppose it.
This ends side one. Turn your tape over for the continuation.
Unfortunately, it did not come to pass. When it did not come to pass, so then, as we'll discuss next time, that's how the story of Bar Kokhba got started. But the Jews were able to repair relations with the Romans rather rapidly after such a bloody, bitter conflagration, after such a terrible war. The Romans never suffered as many casualties. The Romans never had such a bitter war as the 10-year war of the Jews. And therefore, for them to be able to restore relations was unusual. And the Jews, the Talmidei Chachamim, traveled many times to Rome. Ram Gamliel, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yoshua, Rabbi Yishmael, they traveled many times to Rome to negotiate matters with the Romans, to strengthen the Jewish community in Rome. Rabbi Yoshua ben Chananya, his specialty was to redeem, to find Jewish children and redeem them. The Talmud and Gittin tells us that the great Rabbi Yishmael was his find. He found him in a Roman prison in Rome, and he redeemed him. He went looking for Jewish children the world over. After the Second World War, Rav Herzog, Zecher Tzadik Levrocha, who was the chief rabbi of Palestine then, traveled for almost 2 years consecutively to try and find Jewish children and have them released. He personally went to the Vatican to ask the Pope Pius to release about 12,000 Jewish children that were in Christian orphan homes, Catholic orphan homes, throughout Europe. And the Pope gave him 4,000. The current Cardinal of Paris, Lustiger, used to be Lustiger, is one of the children that Zechob Gishmat when he was 14. And there are thousands and thousands of such Jewish children throughout Europe. And people gave them to homes, to neighbors. The church collected children. So in our time, it was the same mission that Rev Yeshua ben Chananya embarked upon 1900 years ago to get Jewish children out of the Roman jails and out of the slave markets, to redeem the captives. That was his special mitzvah. He traveled back and forth to Rome. It was not taking an Alitalia plane. You can imagine the Gemara tells us many times of storms and troubles that they had on the sea. He was not a young man. But the devotion of this generation of leaders to save the Jewish people. They were convinced that the Jewish people could survive, but in order, what people oftentimes forget is that in order to have a Jewish people, you have to have Jews. You got to have human beings. You cannot talk in theory. You have to have people. And they sacrificed everything to save people, to redeem people. One of the Talmidim of Ram Gamliel of Yavne was the man called Rabbi Elezer ben Hurkanus, or as he is known in the Gemara, Rabbi Elezer HaGodol, the great Rabbi Elezer. Rabbi Elezer ben Hurkanus was the son of a millionaire. and he left it to study Torah with Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. His father, as all good Jewish fathers, promptly disowned him. And only later in his life, when Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus reached greatness and thousands of Talmidim came to hear, so the father came one day and said, "Who's that? You know, who's speaking? Where's everybody going?" They said, "You don't know, we're going to hear the great Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus." So all of a sudden it dawned on him that that there may be more to life than just the inheritance. Rabbi Elazar ben Hyrcanus, again, he was a very strong person. The Gemara holds him to be the last of the Talmidim of Beis Shammai, even though he was a Talmid of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was a Talmid of Hillel. But in Shita, in theory, in outlook on the world, and outlook on Halacha, he was from the house of Shammai. He was the last of the Mohicans. And he was from the house of Shammai not only in terms of Halacha, but politically as well. The house of Shammai was much more aggressive, as I discussed with you before. They participated in the rebellions against Herod and against the Romans. They were a more aggressive, a more fighting group. Even when it came to matters of halacha, that they felt that they were correct, so they were willing to fight for it, to kill for it, to die for it. The Gemara tells us the 18 things, 18 gzeiros that we agreed with the house of Shammai is because there was no way that they were going to give in on it. It meant civil war. And therefore, the house of Hillel, following their usual custom of adapting and of uniting the people and of preventing war, accepted them upon themselves. However, Rabbi Elazar crossed Rabban Gamliel. And he crossed him in matters of the authority of the Nasi. And he would not accept upon himself the authority of the Nasi. And in effect, he wanted to continue in that generation the split between the house of Shammai and the house of Hillel. And Rabban Gamliel said, "The time is over. It's a luxury that we cannot afford now. Whatever the halacha is, and that's what it is." And therefore they put Rabbi Elazar HaGadol in Cherem. The Gemara says, "Rabbi Elazar Shamutihu." Oh, you want to tell me about Rabbi Elazar? Don't quote me Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar's in Cherem. And the Cherem was enforced that even Rabbi Elazar's Talmidim, such as Rabbi Akiva, who was his Talmid, did not go within his Dalet Amos, did not walk next to him. And the Gemara tells us that they came to visit him on his deathbed, and he himself told them, "You can't go farther than here." But he didn't give in. But he told them, "The Cherem is effective. You can't come in farther than this into the room." And when he died, so then Rabbi Akiva stood up and said, "The Cherem is over." So you're... means the major leagues here. People of tremendous personal integrity. But Rabban Gamliel felt compelled to reinforce the position. If Rabbi Elazar could break away, then other people would break away. And you would have, again, a chaotic situation. You'd have a Jewish people without central authority. You would have Chas v'sholem, 2 Torahs, 3 Torahs, 10 Torahs, everybody would be on his own. Jewish people couldn't survive. And therefore, he said, even the great Rebbe Elazar in Cherem. And he was supported by Rabbi Yeshua ben Chananya and the other Talmidei Chachomim, even the Talmidim of Rebbe Elazar HaGadol. Even Rabbi Elazar HaGadol's own Talmidim supported him in the Chayrim. And the Chayrim, as I told you, was enforced, was valid. He was banned and put into anathema. Now, usually, we will see in the long history of the Jewish people, a Chayrim is usually a very counterproductive weapon. Most of the other times that Charomim have been issued in Jewish history, it did more for the victim than for anyone else. It gained him sympathy, it gained him popularity, it made a cause where no cause existed before, and most of the times it was ineffective. It didn't work. There's no doubt, for instance, that Spinoza would not be Spinoza if they would not have put him into Chayrim. And that's true of many, many other things that happened in Jewish life. Till our day, right? There are all sorts of signs floating in Muncie. That instead of helping, that usually is counterproductive to the cause. Though it's very good for sign printers. But Rabbi Elazar's Chayrim was a very effective Chayrim. And the Gemara tells us, the famous Machlekes, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, that in the Gemara in Bava Metzia, that they had a dispute in Halacha, and Rabbi Elazar said, if I'm right, he said, then let the river run backwards. He did all sorts of miracles. And every miracle that he said came about. And Rabbi Yeshua said, it's got nothing to do. Lo b'shamayim. He said, I don't care. I really don't care what heaven thinks. Here we took the vote. You're going to do like us or not? It's not a question. You're right. The river agrees with you. The walls want to fall in. Everything you will see you say is true. But the halacha is the way we say in the Beis Din. You agree with us or not. And if you don't agree, you're in chayr. And that's how they saved the unity of the Jewish people. So that was the first great dispute of Ram Gamliel of Yavne. The second great dispute is with his own Talmid, Reb Yeshua ben Chananya. On this, there are many, many different ideas. I only want to tell you one idea. I don't say that it's exactly that it's the only idea, but it certainly is a nuance that's present. Ram Gamliel disputed with Reb Yeshua ben Chananya three times. It's mentioned in the Talmud. Regarding three halachas. One time had to do with what day Yom Kippur would fall, meaning a dispute as to the calendar. What day was Rosh Hashanah? And naturally, if they disagreed what day Rosh Hashanah was, then the dispute was what day would Yom Kippur fall. And Rabbi Yeshua held that Rabbi Gamliel made an error in the calculation. The calculation was inaccurate. He was wrong. The witnesses were wrong. It wasn't correct. And Ram Gamliel told Rabbi Yeshua to stand up in front of the entire assembly. And he said to him, Almod al raglecho, stand on your feet, Yeshua. And he told him, you come to me on your Yom Kippur. With your wallet, with the pack on your back, with your shoes, with your staff, in order to show that it wasn't Yom Kippur. And Rabbi Yeshua did so. And Rabbi Yeshua came, so Ram Gamliel rose for him and kissed him. And he said, you are my teacher, my elder, greater than I am. But the bottom line was that Ram Gamliel was the Nossi. The second time, there was a private discussion regarding a question of a blemish in a firstborn animal. And Rabbi Yeshua held that it was permissible, and Rabbi Gamliel held it was not. And Rabbi Yeshua had told it to someone privately, his opinion, and that person had repeated it to Rabbi Gamliel. So the Rabbi Yeshua held that publicly there was only one halacha, but that privately he didn't have to give up his ideas because Rabbi Gamliel disagreed with them. But Rabbi Gamliel held that he, even privately he had to give up his ideas. And again, Rabbi Gamliel shamed him. He told him, Amod al raglecha, stand on your feet, retract. And he made him say, you know, and he, Rabbi Yeshua had to say something that, like I didn't mean it, or I didn't say it, or you misunderstood. He got out of it. And then the third dispute that has to do with whether davening Ma'ariv, whether the prayer of Arvis is a chova or a reshus, whether it's an obligation or it's only if one, it's a voluntary thing or it's obligatory. And there again, they had the dispute, and again, he had told the story privately to Reb Shimon ben Yochai, and it came back to Rabbi Gamliel, and Rabbi Gamliel said to him, stand on your feet and retract. When that happened the third time, so then everybody in the Beis Medrash could stand it no longer. They felt that Rabbi Gamliel was high-handed. He had no right to treat Rabbi Yeshua that way. For most of the Meforshim, it's apparent that Rabbi Yeshua was probably older than he was. And therefore, they got together and they deposed Rabbi Gamliel. We have the great revolution. All of this on top of the Churban. It's a time of tremendous ferment. They deposed him, fired him. And they appointed in his stead a teenager, Rabbi Lozer ben Azariah, whom we read about in the Haggadah, Hare Ani Kiven Shivim Shona. I am as though I am 70 years old, even though according to many, was the Yerushalmi says 16, 18, he was a young man. But he turned gray overnight. The Ribbono Shel Olam made him white overnight. The wags say that God didn't have to do anything if you become the head of the Jewish people, so naturally you become white overnight. You want to see a picture, I want to show you something. It's not a joke. There's a picture of Yitzhak Rabin in today's times. On page 9, I think it is. I should know taste this the way I know that's nonsense. Huh? 11. Good, thank you. Look at that picture of Rabin. The man is 5 years, 10 years older than he was 6 months ago. Man's an old man in front of your eyes. He became an old man. Because he's now the minister of defense. The minister of defense knows what could be, God forbid. So he's an old man from it. So Rabbi Lozer ben Azariah turned white overnight. And he became the Nossi. So again, he's not from the family of Hillel. And he's a young person. It's really a rebellion of what the older Malabatim used to call the youth. Right? The youth is taking over. And in the Lashon of the Gemara and the Lashon of Chazal, they have a name for that day. It's called Bo Bayom. That day. That's like the most famous day in Jewish history. That day. The day when they overthrew Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne and deposed him. And they made Rabbi Lozer ben Azariah. So on that day, there were tremendous changes that occurred. One of the changes was Rabbi Gamliel's educational theory was, I don't know how he enforced it, he had guards at the door, and he said, Mi she'ein tocho kebaro al yikones. someone whose inside is not like his outside, let him not enter. In other words, we only want 100%. We only want the valedictorians, the moral people, no hypocrites. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah changed that. That day they took the guards away. Kol mi sherotze lichones yikones. Anybody that wants to come learn Torah, come. All the phonies, all the charlatans, all the frauds, come. Hamor shebo machzira lemutiv. Sit down and learn. We'll see. We'll do something with you. Bo bayom nisrabu asaf solim, the Gemara says. That day they had to bring extra benches into the yeshiva. It was full. Two pedagogic outlooks. And they both exist today also. The extreme elitist outlook. La'avdol Elef Avdolah is Jefferson. Jefferson said that the aristocracy should run the country. They're the only ones you go to school. They're the only ones, you know. How can it be Jefferson? He didn't know. If he would stand up Trias Amazim today and he would see that a drug addict in Harlem has the same vote that Jefferson has. So then, you know, he jumped back in the grave. But that was one outlook on life. And the other outlook on life is let them all in. Torah belongs to everybody. Don't worry. You have to believe in Torah also. Hamor Shabo. The light of the Torah, Machziran Lemutiv, helps. Doesn't help now, it helps 10 years from now, 20 years from now. Doesn't help you, it helps your child. Doesn't help your child, help your grandchild. Open for everybody. 100% participation. That's a drastic change in Jewish life. When Rabbi Gamliel becomes the Nossi again, when they put him back on, he never changes it back again. He accepts, which also is, in England, you know why England is part of the reason why England is such a mess? First of all, they deserve it, but aside from that, aside from playing God, why England is such a mess is because every time Labour wins, they nationalize the country, and then the Conservatives win 5 years later, and they denationalize. So the country, it's going up and down like a yo-yo, right? There's no, you cannot build up an industrial, competitive, technological base in today's world and going back and forth like that. There are certain industries that have been nationalized and denationalized 3 times in the last 25 years. And therefore, they are not going to be very efficient. But that's what happens, though. When the socialists win, it's part of their doctrine that they have to nationalize, whether it works or not. I mean, it's their idea. That's why they won. Ram Gamliel is not like that. Ram Gamliel, they changed it, It's changed. Bo Bayom, on that day, we have an entire Masechta Mishnayos written on that day. The Masechta Edios, where they announced anybody that has things to say in Torah, traditions, come today and tell it. Today is open discussion. Tell us what you know. And the recording, it's almost like a tape recording of that day is spilled out in the Maseches Edios. The day is naturally more than one day, but it's spilled out there. Each and every one came and testified what halachas he heard, what traditions he had. And they put the Torah together on that day so that they would be able to present it to the Jewish people. And Rabban Gamliel sits deposed. And he thought about it, and he thought about it, and he said, I was wrong. Bo va'afayah, says Rabbi Yoshua. I have to go ask him for mechila. that was wrong. If my actions could be interpreted in such a fashion, then they were wrong. And the Talmud tells us, and one again, how the Talmud tells a story. Rabbi Yeshua lived in a hovel, an old, broken, poor man that had seen everything. And he came into this, and Rabbi Gamliel lived in a palace his whole life. He was the Nasi. He was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. And he came in, and Rabbi Yeshua was a blacksmith. So his meager hut was black with the soot of the bellows. And he came in and he saw how dirty the walls are. And he said to him, "This is the way you live." "Hey, I didn't know." And Rabbi Yeshua, that's the only word of Musar that we heard from Rabbi Yeshua. He said, "That's your problem. You don't know the tsar of other Talmidei Chachomim." Which is true. A wealthy person, it's hard for him to imagine somebody that isn't. It's hard to put yourself in someone else's place. I remember one of my favorite stories with my wife that we tell over often is that when we first came to Miami Beach, so our synagogue then paid me the munificent sum of $9,000 a year, which in today's money would be much more than $9,000, but when you had four children and you had to pay like $3,000 tuition, so it didn't leave you too much to make mistakes with. And we had a very good friend of ours in Miami, an older couple, and they were very wealthy. Her husband was a doctor, and they'd all their lives lived. And she had lived in wealth, and she had three maids constantly. She had a maid to clean the house, and a maid to do the laundry, and a maid to help her with the cooking and serving. She had three maids all of her life. So once she came over to our house, and my wife did not at that day have three maids, so she was, potching around, and the kids were hanging from the chandelier, and everything was going on. And she said to her, "I don't understand why you don't get help." And she was, they're paying me $9,000. She said, "I don't understand why you don't get help, right?" And she didn't mean to be cruel or anything. Because if you've got three maids, then you don't understand why the other person doesn't have any. It must be you're a tightwad, you're cheap, whatever your problem is. That was Rabbi Yeshua's only comment to him. That's what's missing, Rav Gamliel. If you had that, then you never would have done it. You would have been more sensitive to what was happening in the Beis HaMedrash. And Rav Gamliel heard him, and he accepted it. And Rabbi Yeshua sent a message back to the Sanhedrin, back to the yeshiva, and he said, "The garments of the Nasi belong to the one whom they fit." They belong to Rav Gamliel. So now they were in a quandary. They couldn't fire Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah because we have halacha of Mailin Vein Moridin. Amazing halacha in Jewish life. You can't depose somebody from office that easily. And even though he only came in as a substitute. And on the other hand, Rav Gamliel was the Nasi, and they all agreed to put him back, and they saw that they needed him. So they made the great compromise that three Shabbosim of the month, Rav Gamliel said the shir, and he was the Nasi, and one Shabbos, Rav Elazar ben Azariah. And that famous phrase came in the Talmud, "Shabbos shel mi hayom." Who's at bat this Shabbos? Whose Shabbos is it now? Which again, if you'll listen, you'll hear the rabbi's insight into people. How they settled the problem. And those people, that generation, from Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, that is the generation that produced the next generation. The generation of Rabbi Akiva, of Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Yishmael, and that's the generation of Bar Kokhba. And that's where we're going to resume next time to discuss those events. And again, this is, as I've told you many times, this is the worst of all periods in Jewish history. It's the best of all periods in Jewish history. Because the enormous personalities that parade across the screen one after another, the Rabboni Shalom had to give us such personalities, otherwise could not have survived. Ordinary people could not have carried us through the time. But none of these people are ordinary people, giants. And that's why even 2,000 years later, you tell the story, you know, in your mind's eye, you see them and you hear them and you have an appreciation of who they are and what they wanted to do and why in the hearts and minds and souls of the Jewish people, they are our fathers and mothers. They all live. And they exert a tremendous influence even until our day.